Welcome to today's edition of the Bible Class. Our teacher, Dr. Kenneth C. Hill, is teaching from the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes. You may send your questions by email through our website at whcbradio.org. That's whcbradio.org. Or you may mail the questions to the Bible Class, care of WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Blountville, Tennessee, 37617. And now, here is Dr. Hill with today's lesson.
Welcome to the Bible Class. We are continuing in our study in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is the wisdom book written by Solomon, giving us the view of the man on the earth. Whereas with Proverbs, we have the celestial look as well as the terrestrial look. In the book of Ecclesiastes, it's only a terrestrial look. However, we might be shortchanging the book of Ecclesiastes by saying it dogmatically that it's only about the earth. Quite honestly, it's a view from the earth, but it's about eternity in reality. And we'll get into that as we go along. We're in chapter 6 of this book by the preacher Solomon. And he's been telling us in chapter 6 about the vanity of riches. Now, we've been learning about the vanities of various things. As we go through this book, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, saith the preacher. Here we've been seeing the vanity of riches. In verse 7, we begin in this study, all the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. How true it is for each one of us that we work to eat. Now we also eat to work, but we work to eat. And the appetite is never filled, no matter how great the abundance, and even though we're satiated, that means we are absolutely stuffed, we have, in just a few hours from that point, or minutes for some people, we're hungry again. In other words, you can't work enough to satisfy even yourself. For what hath the wise more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. You see, efforts to satisfy ourselves are frustrated by the very necessity of labor. And the fact that anything that we earn is fleeting. There's always somebody there to take it away from us. If it's not the tax man, it's a relative. If it's not a relative, it's an employee. If it's not an employee, it's a vendor. That's the way you look at it, according to what Solomon is telling us here. The wise man, then, would have no advantage over the fool in this area of labor and supply. For what hath the wise more than the fool? Nothing. The poor man doesn't have an advantage or disadvantage, either one, in his humility. Verse 9 tells us that it is better to enjoy our bounty, whatever that bounty or scant bounty that it might be. It's better to enjoy what we have today than it is to try to make plans for the future that may never come, for the future things that we may have. I remember a cousin of mine when I was a child, and he was living in poverty. I think most all of us were in those days. We just didn't know it. But he had meager circumstances, let's just put it that way. And he would always tell me what he was going to buy me for Christmas. Well, this guy was younger than me. We were just little kids. None of us had any money, and none of us were going to buy anybody anything for Christmas. We might make a candle or something, but we weren't going to buy anything. But this child would make promises all year long of what he was going to buy me or my sister or some other relative for Christmas. It never came. Now, Christmas came, but the gift never came because he didn't have any money. He was talking wildly. And yet, this is the same thing that the writer of Ecclesiastes, Solomon the king, is talking about. He said, it's better to enjoy what you have than it is to make plans for stuff that you don't have. You may never see those things. That's the wandering of the desire. It's better to have the sight of the eyes. That is what you have presently. And this goes along with what James had to say in his epistle when James was writing and said, don't say that I'm going to go to this town and in a certain amount of time I'm going to make this much profit and then I'm going to come back and we'll spend it together. He said, don't do that. You don't know what tomorrow holds. And none of us do. None of us know what the morrow holds. And so it is better to enjoy what we have presently than it is to bank on those things yet to come that may never arrive. Verse 10, that which hath been is named already, and it is known that it is man, neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. Seeing there may be many things that increase vanity, what is the man better, the better? For who knoweth what is good for man in this life, all the days of his vain life, which he spendeth as a shadow? For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? Well, we know the Lord can tell us. We know that God knows, and God can tell us. But he's talking here of human beings. Verses 10 through 12 emphasize one of the key notes of the book of Ecclesiastes. Man is too limited in his knowledge and his understanding to explain the problems of life. We are too impoverished in our thinking. We are too finite in our being. These questions, who knoweth, which is in verse 12, for who knoweth what is good for man in this life, they come around four times in this book. And the plain statement of man does not know is used seven times. So you've got 11 of these phrases, basically, that are used in the book to bring about an understanding that we are deficient when it comes to knowledge. We're deficient when it comes to understanding. We have to depend upon Almighty God for direction. When mankind learns that and lives by that, then we have a better life. And this is what the preacher is trying to tell us here in Ecclesiastes. Now, we've been talking about vanities and all of these different vanities, just now finishing in chapter 6 with the vanity of riches. In chapter 7, we have a little turn in the book here, and we're going to wind up in chapter 7 understanding that wisdom and goodness are things that are to be sought after. In fact, in verse 1 of chapter 7, he begins it. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance the heart is made better. Now here he is writing as if he's giving us Proverbs again, realizing that a good name is chosen above all things. I had a friend who's made an impact upon my life, who told me a long time ago, he said, the only thing that I have that I inherited from my father is my name, and I want to keep it clean. I thought, wow, I understand that. And I think that those of us who grew up in a certain time, in a certain generation, in a certain place, I know it was in my region of the world that I grew up in, we were taught by our fathers that we were not to disgrace the name of the family. A good name was precious, better than precious ointment. And you are given a good name, you better keep it good. You don't want to make it something other than a decent name. And the day of death than the day of one's birth. Think about that for a moment. It's counterintuitive to us. We think of the joy that we have when a new baby is born into this world, and we get all excited, and we're so thankful, and we rejoice. Maybe we give presents one to another, you know. We just celebrate in various ways the baby's being born. But here he says, the day of death is better than the day of one's birth. As we consider that, let's think about the summation of the matter. And he mentions it in verse 2, about it being better to go to the place of mourning than it is to go to the place of feasting, because that's the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. We know what one has accomplished, even though there may be not a full understanding. We have some understanding of what the person has accomplished when their life is over, when it's finished on this earth. We have some summation of the good or the evil that was accomplished in that period of time that the person existed. And he's saying it's all then wrapped up. He says, sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness the countenance of the heart is made better. It takes some difficulties, as we all know, as we're journeying through this life, for us to be tempered, for us to learn how to stand and to live and to do that we need to be doing. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. Surely oppression maketh a wise man mad, and that word mad there means out of his mind. It means to make them a lunatic, or to make them totally crazy and unthinking. Surely oppression maketh a wise man mad, not angry, but totally unhinged. And a gift destroyeth the heart. And a gift there is not a gift as in a Christmas gift or birthday gift or an anniversary present or something like that. It's the word gift there is bribe. So a bribe would destroy the heart. You don't take bribes because it then forces you to do things that your heart would tell you not to do if you were right thinking. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Anger is one letter away from danger. D-A-N-G-E-R versus A-N-G-E-R. And it is anger that destroys relationships, destroys any kind of situation of peace and comfort and love. Anger resteth in the bosom of fools, and if a fool is holding anger, then that makes him even more of a fool. Say not thou, what is the cause that the former days were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. Don't be looking back. Don't be looking at times before your times and saying, oh, I wish I'd lived in those days because it was so much better. Here the preacher says, that's foolishness. Don't even consider what was in the past as being any better than what you have today. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Now, it's always good to have money. It's always good to have money with wisdom. But if you are prepared with understanding, then you have life. Consider the work of God, for who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. God also hath set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. We find God, we have found all that is important. And God makes a day for everything and everything for its day. Commentators have said that, and have agreed with me, that these pithy sayings that we've been reading are much like the Proverbs that Solomon gives us in his book of Proverbs. Now, Ecclesiastes is not just a pointing out of the vanities of life, but it is an extolling of the wisdom that we get from God and the need for wisdom as we live our lives. And this is of all importance. Mourning and sorrow, Solomon brings here, are better than feasting and laughter, because they cause man to reflect wisely on the brief life that he is living. The laughter of the fool is compared to the crackling of thorns. Both are just noise. Both pass away quickly. Both flare up and flame out. So it's important for us to understand that the laughter of the fool is worthless. Vanity of vanities, indeed. And so we are not to be characterized by the laughter of the fool. We're not to be the fool, and we're not to be the fool's pundit. We're not to be involved with foolish things. Verse 10, to talk about those good old days isn't a good thing. It's not a wise thing to do. Good and bad days are the work of God. And they're used in God's sovereign plan, and they are above our weakness, they're above our infirmities, and God's plan is above our ability to understand the plan of God, because it is God's wisdom, not man's wisdom. And so whether the days come that are beneficial or somewhat hurtful in our way of thinking, it really doesn't matter because God's in control of all of it and is in charge of all of it. It is important for us to understand what God is teaching us. And that's what we're here for. We're here on this earth to be taught. So, in the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider what God is teaching us. God is always working on our behalf.
Thank you for joining us today for this edition of the Bible Class with Dr. Kenneth C. Hill. You may reach us by email by going to our website, whcbradio.org, and sending us an email on the Contact Us link. That's whcbradio.org. If you prefer to use the postal service, our address is The Bible Class, WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Bluntville, Tennessee, 37617. That's The Bible Class, care of WHCB, Post Office Box 5, Bluntville, Tennessee, 37617. You may also call us at 423-878-6279. Until our next Bible Class program, we are trusting that the Lord will richly bless you as you serve Him.